CliffCentral.com.
All right, CliffCentral.com on a Tuesday morning. You are with me, you're with Lebang, you're with Simpiwe, and we've got Dr. Mark joining us shortly to talk about the T-Health Show and to answer your questions about all those things that most people don't want to talk about because they're embarrassed or they're worried or secretly they're terrified. Who knows? It could all be part of the agenda this morning, and we want you to share your questions so that we can put them to Dr. Mark. That's coming up in just a short while. There are a couple of other things that I do want to get to this morning. I know that Lebang spoke about this on her own show, Life with Lebang, which you need to listen to on a Thursday if you haven't already. And she spoke about being scammed on the show. And you think you're being scammed again, and this time it's by a friend.
I think I've got like a freaking magnet here that says, scam me, scam me. I don't know what's going on.
What's this?
But, yeah. So I went into business with a friend of mine like maybe 2 years ago. And when I say friend, I mean like maybe like drinking buddy, you know, someone that you see out, and that kind of friend. So I went into business with him. And so my mom's house is like right on the highway. Like our backyard basically overlooks the highway. So I was like, you know what, why don't I put some billboards in the yard or at least some towers? You know, let's get a little bit of money coming in, that kind of vibe. And he works in this industry. So I'm like, he's the go-to guy. I speak to him. He's like, let's do this. I've got you. Just give me X amount of money to make it happen. I'm like, perfect. I give him X amount of money. We build the towers. And he says to me, look, we'll get clients like instantly. Don't worry about it. Like next week we'll have a client. I'm like, that's fantastic news. It's been 2 years.
Nothing.
We haven't booked a single client. Nothing's happened. So I'm like, it's cool. I understand. Like not everything's going to happen overnight. I still believe that it'll work out because it's such a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
So this week, yesterday, he sends me a message. He's like, yeah, look, so you owe me money. I'm like, what exactly do I owe you money for? He goes, well, I built towers and there's an outstanding balance. And I was like, okay, but isn't the deal that we're waiting to get a client first and then you'll get paid out?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, well, because there's no clients, I'm just going to come to your house and take those towers and put them somewhere else. You've got until Friday. I'm like, excuse me, what? What's happening right now? Is this like a threat or what's going on? Like, number one, he didn't even take out a cent to build the towers. That was like all my money and my mom's money. All he did was like facilitate it. But now he's telling me that
bastard.
I owe him money. What a fucking asshole. Tell it like it is. He's an asswipe. So I'm like, dude, what's going on? Why are you talking to me like this? Did a little bit of digging, and apparently his reputation is just shit. Like, he goes around burning bridges. This is what he does to people. But I didn't know that. Now I feel like I'm just getting scammed. I've had to call my mom, to call the security of the neighborhood. They need to just block off the crib because he's like, I'm going to come to your house and physically take out these towers. I'm like, but dude, build your own towers. Like, well, you know, it's. I feel like I'm being scammed by this person.
It sounds
and
like you
if
are.
He wants to go to court.
Oof.
I'm going to take him to court because I made him sign a contract. We signed a contract that once we start, you know, getting some sort of money from these towers, then we can go 50-50 on it. Like, he can have some cash, my mom can have some cash, whatever. But now he's like,
Lebang,
these
you
towers
know what?
Aren't making any money.
If you let this guy get away with this, because that's probably what most of the people who've dealt with him so far have done, is they haven't challenged him, is they've let him get away with it.
Yeah.
Because they've looked at it and gone, well, it's going to cost me too much to take him to court. It's not worth it. I'd rather he just comes in and takes everything down. But actually, that's exactly how he gets away with it. He probably pocketed your money straight away. He didn't use it to...
Dude.
Yeah, I mean, now suddenly you're...
I completely agree.
Yeah, no,
he's definitely, like, from the jump been very, very shady. Like, when he told me how much it's going to cost to erect the actual towers, I was like, dude, are you sure? He's like, that's how much it costs. I'm like, sharp. When he came to the house to erect them, it was literally just like some steel material, like you can just see it was like, you know, material that you can get anywhere. And then he just probably gave the labor guys like $5,000 or something. I'm like, all the money that I sent
and
you, this is what you built?
And if he's such a wizard, why didn't he get someone to advertise on there if that's his business?
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. So he's just made me look like a poos. My mom is like feeling a little bit wishy-washy. She's like, are you sure about this? I'm sitting there with like egg on my face. So yeah. If this guy wants to go to court, we can go. What I'm not going to do is let him bully me into, you know, some bullshit.
Well, while we're talking about erecting things in the back garden, let's talk about erections. Let's talk about all the other stuff around men's health. This is why I love being able to have. You think that's funny, eh? Sapira, you like that. So, all right, we've got a show that's been going on for a while now, and it's terrific. And if you haven't listened to it yet, you are missing out in a big way. Dr. Mark is the guy who hosts it. It's called the T-Health Show. And this morning we want to talk to him and just catch up with what's going on in the T-Health Show because there's quite a lot of new stuff happening there. I want to talk about it also because just yesterday we were talking to Leanne and we were talking about how, you know, men reach a certain age and the testosterone just isn't being produced as much. And by the way, the T in T Health is for testosterone, obviously. And we're going to delve a little deeper into that today with Dr. Mark, who joins us. Hey, Dr. Mark, how are you?
Morning, Gareth. You know what? When I heard Eric O'Towers going up, yeah. I knew this is going in a bad direction.
But it's not a... Okay, so you say bad direction or erection, but here's the deal. For so many men, this is a problem which they have to deal with and which affects not only them, but it affects their partners as well. And this is your area of expertise. So, like, it's not embarrassing for you. You talk to people about this every single day, right?
Absolutely. And you know what? You're so right that it doesn't affect only the men. It affects the other partner in the relationship as well. What men do when they cannot have an erection is we start avoiding that situation. Mm-hmm. It creates a lot of anxiety with us, yeah. And you know what, it's embarrassing. So if I can't throw a ball, I'm not going to throw it in public, definitely.
Yeah.
So if I can't get an erection, I'm going to try and avoid that situation at all costs because the brain makes it feel uncomfortable. Now, what happens in a relationship with women, they perceive that distancing or avoidance from the man as he doesn't find me attractive anymore or he's finding sex somewhere else. And that creates a divide between the two parties.
Right.
And more often than not, the patients present not only with erectile dysfunction, but with depression, anxiety, uh-huh. Motivation that's down, libido that's down. And if I'm lucky enough, you know what, I have a couple that comes in and that discuss this. And when we go through this process with it, not only is there, oh, thank you, you know what, because we want to make this relationship work, but if it doesn't work on a sexual level or on a physical level, we're going to let it go. So you know what, yes.
Let's just start at the beginning. I mean, what age, because we know that age plays an important role in this, and for many men it only starts to become a problem when they reach a certain age. What is the usual time for men to start worrying about this kind of thing, just in terms of biology? Let's put aside the, you know, the anxiety, the depression, the things that go with it that in very many of these circumstances are particular to that person. Is there a certain age where men need to start worrying about this, or have you met men who at all ages develop erectile dysfunction or sexual problems or, you know, mental health problems that are related to sex? What's your experience?
It's very scary that we are finding that this is getting younger and younger. When I started to practice, I would see patients coming in 45, 50, 60, 70. Yeah. Now I'm seeing patients in their 30s. The problem with this is that lifestyle plays a big role. What for me is more scary is that the patients that I'm starting to see at younger and younger ages are patients that are actually presenting because they used steroids. Ooh. When they were younger.
Now that's interesting.
Ah, that's an interesting thing. Shock, yes.
Okay.
So what happens is there's pathways in the brain. And when you use testosterone or steroids, you can switch these pathways both on and off. If you switch them off long enough, they stay off. If you trip them, like a power surge with too high doses of anything, you fry them. And then that's what becomes the problem.
What's the relationship between steroids and hormones? What's the relationship particularly between steroids and testosterone in the male body?
So testosterone is a steroid hormone. Your steroid hormones all come from cholesterol. So testosterone, estrogen, your thyroid hormone, your adrenal gland, cortisol, adrenaline, noradrenaline, those are all steroid hormones. So if you fuck with them, you change all of them. Change one, and it has not only a direct effect on the hormone system that you are playing with, but all the other systems. I take the analogy of a racing car team. I have known nothing what I'm talking about now. I don't watch cars. BMW is my best friend. So, but with a racing car team, you have the car and you can plug the car into a computer and it will give you some information. So I can go and do blood tests, and once I've done my blood test, I will know what is happening in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And I can fine tune that body, and then I put a driver behind the wheel, and there's the human component.
Right.
And the driver will say to us, okay, I'm not able to brake fast enough or hard enough. There's not enough power, or I'm sliding around a corner.
Mm.
And then as the technical support team, I can go and adjust the car to suit the driver's needs until it rains, and then everything changes again. And that's the complexity of hormones. You change one thing in the car. If this racing car, I change the power without looking at what's going to happen to the tires around the corner.
Yes.
I'm going to skid off and end in the wall. And that's why if you supplement with a hormone, you need to know what it's going to do to not only that hormone system, but all the other ones.
I want to let the girls ask a couple of questions.
Fertility is a big one for these guys as well.
I want to let the girls ask a few questions just now, but before I let them have a full go, because this is a thing that I have experienced in terms of some of my male friends who've been complaining about it. They've been saying, for example, that alcohol plays a huge role in this. Is that true? And what is the role? Because here's something that Michael even says. He says many young people start having sex because of alcohol. You know, it gives them the confidence, the bravado, the strength to be able to actually get to that point. But then they can't get it up. And it destroys their capacity to get it up. They become stuck without emotional or physical capacities. Is that in your experience, the truth? I mean, what role does alcohol play here?
You know, I'm not aware of a direct link between alcohol lowering hormone levels. What I can tell you is that hormone levels are dependent on neurotransmitters.
Mm-hmm.
So neurotransmitters are chemical messengers.
Right.
What will happen is there's a chemical transmitter, and we all know about it, called dopamine.
Yeah.
And dopamine is a reward-dependent behavior. So you do something that makes you feel good, that's the reward, and then because it's nice, it's going to become I want to do it again, dependency, and you know what, then it carries on. So when we drink alcohol, we lower inhibition. So now I can have more confidence to go into a sexual situation. It's nice, I want to do it again, I'm going to drink again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, where the problem comes in. It's exactly the same with any kind of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
I do something, I take a line, I whatever, I take a pull, oh, this feels good, it's nice, I want to do it again.
Right.
And that forms a dependency. And that will have an effect then. Then, you know what, it's, but I need this to perform in a certain way. If I don't have it, it's difficult.
Jeez, and we thought it was the women in the relationship who made it a very complex thing. Yeah, it's not true. It's like clearly it's half and half. So Simpiwe Lebang, I'm sure you got lots of questions for Dr. Mark. It's your turn. Go ahead.
I think I'll start. I'd like to know, like, as the partner of someone who's going through this, like, what should I do? How can I be supportive? And what are some of the things I can, you know, say or don't say to get into a space to either want to go to a doctor and check it out or, you know, for the betterment of this relationship?
The easiest thing that you can say is say to him, listen to a podcast like this. Because the moment that you tell this man, there's a problem, I'm aware of your problem, you know what, you embarrass him even more. So that embarrassment will allow, again, I think, pull back. If someone tells me, I noticed that you can't get it up, or, you know what, notice that like halfway through you get a little bit tired or distracted. There is some way where you can go for help. You know, it's not going to be a very fun conversation.
No.
But I'd rather have someone talk about it in a relationship and be supportive. You know what? This happened. We are getting older. Hormones are declining. You are on blood pressure medication. You're a diabetic. You know, those things contribute to weaker erections. There is someone where you can get help. Or even patients who are depressed and anxious, who are on antidepressants and anti-anxiolytics. 90%, I think, of the population is, and if they aren't, they should be. So, you know, so there are ways of doing this. In my case, you know, sorry, Gareth, but I drink whiskey.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, so that's because you know.
My partner also likes it.
So people talk about whiskey dick, for example. So that's why I brought it
up. Yes.
Yeah. Right, Lebang?
Yes, whiskey dick, I don't know, like, you're saying that there's no facts and, like, the science doesn't speak for it, but, like, can we please unpack this one matter? Like, I've been in a great relationship for the past 5 years, but when it comes to whiskey dick, I even know now, okay, this is what you're drinking, all right, cool. So, Doc, I need to know, what is whiskey dick, theoretically, on paper, so I can mentally prepare myself? Like, I just...
So my best estimate of whiskey dick is that it's someone that drank a bit too much and now can't get it up.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
So, you know what? There's also the excuse it wasn't dark enough. You know, I could see what was happening no, let's not go there.
All right. Well, what about this? Yeah. Hold on, Lebang. I want to ask something related to this because for a lot of guys, it's more about being embarrassed than it is about the actual thing. Now, does fatigue play an important role in this too? Because it could just be that you're tired. You know, I mean, there are occasions where all of us are just exhausted, and maybe you've had a very long day, or maybe you've already been partying all night, and then you're just not in the mood and things are not working. And it doesn't matter how sexy the situation is, you're just tired. That happens too, right?
Absolutely. You need to understand that in most mammal species, it's only female women that can have sex without being at the peak of their estrogen cycle. So men always have to perform. women can perform whenever they want to,
mm-hmm.
or are coerced into it.
Right.
With men, it's not that. Men always have the ability to perform. So if you are exhausted, if you are under psychological stress, there are certain things that will say, okay, blood's not going to go down there. You need it somewhere else.
Hmm.
And then that can be a problem.
Is it inevitable for all men to eventually experience this stuff? Or are there some men who can be virile and perform for their whole lives?
That's a difficult question to answer. I had a stripper in my office not so long ago.
Yeah.
This guy performed without his pants on three legs for a very long time, and then went through a divorce. You laugh. I kid you not.
Mm-hmm.
32 centimeters, not fun. So, well.
Whoa. Are we going to ignore that?
No.
32 centimeters.
That's substantial, all right? Substantial.
So, let's carry on. He then went through a divorce and now sits with erectile dysfunction. To the point where this very, very handsome man cannot allow himself to go into a relationship because he feels inadequate.
Wow.
Then I have a 68-year-old that comes to me for hormone optimization therapy only.
Mm-hmm.
Never had a problem with an erection. So it varies. There's so many things that can happen during your lifetime, whether it's medication, whether it's just, substances, whether it's just lifestyle, whether it's trauma, that can have an impact. So there is, it's very difficult to answer, can everyone have sex for a long time?
What about, I mean, you hinted at this, but lifestyle is an important part of this. Are there other things that not having enough testosterone in your body starts doing to a man? I mean, you know, men unless we have something to work for. For many men, the motivation is power, sex, success, being better than all the others, achieving things, sport. You know, for many of us, those are the things that define us as men. And testosterone, obviously, over time, as it starts to dip, and particularly as we reach middle and latter age, these things start to affect the way that we think about ourselves. Because if you've judged yourself all your life on your achievements and your virility and your ability to bed various women and all that kind of thing, then it can have a very devastating effect on men once those things start to go away, or once those aren't the best measures, and suddenly much younger men come into the picture and steal your thunder, so to speak.
Well, what we need to know is that testosterone is not only necessary in men, but it's very much necessary in women.
Hmm.
Testosterone, as part of your sex hormone, play a very big role in after puberty in your behavior. Firstly, I believe that the biggest role of testosterone is on the brain. It's made by the brain,
mm-hmm.
for the brain, in the testicles. So things like libido, which is a higher function, our sexual thoughts, that's one. Motivation, energy, depression, anxiety, cognitive functioning in both men and women rely on testosterone.
Yeah.
The way we act relies on testosterone, because testosterone elevates the neurotransmitter dopamine. Dopamine is responsible for the action of that happens between certain parts of the brain.
Right.
So testosterone is not about sex and it's not about muscle. It's about so much more. The very, very interesting thing that testosterone is crucial for is pain management. For your gut, the health of your gut depends on testosterone. Now we know that the gut and the brain have direct connections to each other. We call the gut the second brain by the sheer volume of nerve endings that's in the brain. The gut contains more organisms in it than all the cells in your body. So you're more microorganism than you are human.
Right.
The genetic makeup of these organisms acts as a separate organ with which you cannot without which you cannot survive. And testosterone as well as estrogen govern what happens to these organisms. Not only do these organisms break down your testosterone and your estrogen, which then those metabolites have effect, but you know it actually stimulates the production of these hormones again. So there's so much more to testosterone than just if I'm an alpha male or not.
Yeah.
Alpha male is someone who is a combination of fast, strong, dominant, big, etc., etc. But it's a combination of them, not necessarily just one. Testosterone that governs so many different functions will move you from the runt of the litter to an alpha male, or the other way around. But exactly the same with women. Women is a little bit more intricate because estrogen plays a role there. The balance between testosterone and estrogen is incredibly delicate and misunderstood.
Well, this is an interesting question, and it's pretty straightforward. Jenny says, can training with weights increase testosterone in women and men?
Yeah, absolutely. It's you know what, when we look at why hormones start declining, the biggest one is inactivity.
Mm-hmm.
So couch potatoes, and you know what, then diet, sugar. Sugar, killer
right.
For all of us.
That's
it's
a good point.
Drug. Inactivity. You know, I have a very, very easy philosophy for especially overweight patients.
Yeah.
And that's get into a pool and walk. Don't swim.
Mm-hmm.
Swimming is just get into a pool, take the weight off your joints and walk against the resistance of water. It's the best cardiovascular and resistance exercise that you can get. It's too easy. Start dragging plastic bags behind you and walk in your pool.
Yeah.
Now summer is coming. No excuse not to do it.
So listen, Dr. Mark, I'd love to have more of a conversation with you, but you've got your own show where we can do this too, and I encourage people to listen to the T-Health show. It really is fascinating stuff. If you have questions, though, Dr. Mark is going to be joining us from time to time, and we would love to have you here on cliffcentral.com, 9 a.m. on a Wednesday for the T-Health show. It's brought to you by the T-Clinic. You can get the podcast on our website, our app, or wherever you listen, and send your questions in to contact@cliffcentral.com so we can pass those on to Dr. Mark too, so we can address specific issues, because you know every patient's different and there's no point in us trying to find general rules if it doesn't apply to you. So let's get those questions to Dr. Mark. That's contact@cliffcentral.com. Dr. Mark, we'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, Gareth. Thanks, girls. Have a great day.
You. Good to have you on. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Yeah, there we go. There's some interesting stuff. Some honest facts that people have to take seriously from here on in. That's good stuff. Now, speaking of honesty, it is time for This Is Us, which is our chance to realign the hormones of South Africa, the whole nation.
Oh, Gareth, is on a roll today.
So I'm going to welcome Yatish to the show, and Simpiwe, I know you've got to go and get podcasts ready for us, so I'm going to let you go and do your thing. Here he is. He's Yatish Nasi. He's been on with us a couple of times before already, and he is the he's one of the team of people at the forefront of making This Is Us a reality. It's another edition today. Every Tuesday at 7:30 a.m., we are joined by Yatish along with Lebang, and we get to unpack all that we do in South Africa to spread positivity, kindness, and the good things about being South African. So let's get into some things about some of the things that social media can do that can be very positive and very productive and very helpful, and some of the things that social media does that really don't make things much better. Yatish, over to you.
Cool. Morning, everybody.
Morning.
Okay.
Morning.
Good. I think all of us would have been afflicted by it end of yesterday. I think WhatsApp was down, Instagram was down,
yeah.
Facebook was down. In a way, it was good, but I know a lot of people suffered. And funny enough, you know, the start of the day, it was, I read somewhere Mark Zuckerberg, I mean, not that any of us are crying, lost $7 billion yesterday alone.
Yeah.
That is, wow. It doesn't make much of a dent in that universe, but, you know, if I look at the way his day started, and it's funny, you know, we were having a conversation about this last week, Lebang, myself, and a whole bunch of others, you know, as we looked about what it is we were really trying to achieve. And it's so amazing that, I don't know if any of you have seen that interview with Frances Haugen. I don't know how you pronounced her name.
No,
from Facebook.
Tell me about that.
So there's a whistleblower, and this is what I was saying was a bad day for Mr. Zuckerberg. It started with a 60-minute interview that she just conducted and had gone live yesterday, and she'd apparently spent the last few years collecting documents from Facebook about how they were doing. And there's a quote I'll read it out from an interview, which I thought was super interesting and so relevant to, I guess, what we're trying to achieve, right?
Mm-hmm.
She says, when you have an information environment that is full of angry, hateful, polarizing content that erodes, it erodes our civic trust. It erodes our faith in each other. It erodes our ability to want to care for each other, which I think is so important. And she says the version of Facebook that exists today is tearing our societies apart. Which, you know, maybe it's a little dramatic, fair enough. But, you know, we've often had this conversation. I think, Gareth, you had a blog post recently.
Yeah.
What was it called?
That was the one after the looting and rioting, I think you're referring to.
Is it one about swinging something?
The big swinging deck.
Mm.
There you go.
Okay, this is the most recent one. It's about Richard Spoor,
yes.
and the fact that he posted this picture of something that Dr. Mark didn't need to get involved in because he was perfectly capable. But yeah, I mean, it's more about the way that you deal with bad news, difficulty. Complicated and embarrassing situation, or something where people are trying to cancel you or remove your agency from you online, and just some interesting theories around that.
Yeah, and you know, in many ways, I think, and this is what we were discussing last week, in many ways, as much as it affects an individual, you know, countries are probably, you know, equally vulnerable to that sort of news cycle, that sort of comment cycle. In social media, in media particularly as well, we all know it. You know, we love stories that are, or we're more engaged by stories that are negative to their core, et cetera, et cetera. So,
yeah.
You know, often we've been asked, you know, why do we need This Is Us? And for us, it's so simple. You know, we always talk about ourselves as not the only movement, but as a movement that needs to aggregate and inspire these positive stories. And I mean, Lebang can talk to it. You know, if I think about the guests you've had on your show, we would never have heard of these people existing. Nobody knows.
Yeah.
You know, we hear from the 10% that make the noise. But I mean, you've been chatting to guys who we would have never seen had we not launched This Is Us, who are
100%.
Doing the things we need to do.
And I must be honest, the only way I was able to even get to a point of profiling these guests was through social media. So the funny thing is, now we're sitting at a time where all the negative is being focused on, and we're really putting a lot of emphasis on all the bad that can happen in social media. But I guess the purpose or the role that I'm playing in this is us, and why this is so important to me, is because I want to shed light on the positive. I want to share the good stories, and I want to speak to people who are actually living this. I mean, that interview with Frances just really showed us that shit has gone to shit. If she, you know, was speaking from someone who works inside of Facebook, and, you know, this is what she's showing us, what are we doing about that? We can sit here and grovel and make that noise and be like, yeah, yo, it's bad, eh, shit. Or we can just kind of switch that off and put light on the good that is happening. So the first interview I did was literally with a girl who, her and her mother feed 350 kids every day out of their own pockets. And this was off the back of lockdown. Nobody's funding them. Nobody gave them this grand idea to make the world a better place. They were just sitting and they realized for themselves that around them is a big problem that they may not have all the resources to fix, but with the little that they've got, let's see what they can do. And I encourage you to go and listen to that. And even last week, two young guys who aren't even 25, they also started a similar thing where they're literally sitting in their township and they're realizing how hungry people are, how much it affects these kids to not even have one meal a day. So they like, look, what can we do? These boys live in shacks. Mm. These boys themselves are struggling. But the things that they're doing to make the little world that they live in better is where This Is Us comes in. So what we're doing is just identifying these small pockets of people that are doing huge things. Like, it may seem small, but it's big in the long run. If you listen to some of these stories, you know, one meal is the difference between a bad decision. If I don't eat, it's either my day is completely screwed,
yeah,
or I'm actually going to go do something real. And these are the gaps that these normal, average South African people are trying to fill. So that's where This Is Us comes in.
I'm curious about, just to go back to this, the Facebook whistleblower and the story there. Is, I think that there are a lot of toxic environments in the world. And we tend to think we're the only people who live in a country where there's a lot of trouble to deal with and where there's a lot of difficulty and people are struggling. But really, we're not. And everybody, when you think of Facebook, because I'm sure you've seen these articles. I've been to the Facebook campus in Menlo Park in California. It looks all idyllic, right? They've got a cafeteria there that can give you anything to eat that you could possibly imagine. They have bean bags all over the place, and people get to read at the library. They get to take time off whenever they want. They get to have a sleep during work. Oh. They've got little sleeping pods. Oh. It's probably the most advanced work environment anywhere in the world. And here in South Africa, we think, well, we've got major problems because, of course, our work environments aren't as nice as Facebook is. But they still have problems at Facebook. And it just goes to show, like, human being human is not always easy and pleasant. And we've built this idea in our heads that it should always be a pleasant ride. You know, you should never have to encounter any difficulty. But difficulty, ironically, is the very thing that breeds resilience and creativity and gives people the tools to overcome problems. If you've never dealt with anything difficult in your life, you never have the ability to deal with anything that comes your way. And things are going to come your way, whether you like it or not. There's no job, there's no country, there's no person, there's no president, there's nobody who can protect you from all of that. And that's something we should look at as a major plus in South Africa. It gives us an advantage, not a disadvantage. We're not mollycoddled here. We have serious problems and major challenges. Gives you an opportunity to do things. We need smart thinking, resilient, creative, brilliant, ingenious, and inventive people. And that's the one thing we have in abundance because we don't have an option. I think that's a huge plus.
Definitely.
There's a saying by a great designer I love, a guy called Yves Behar, and he says frustration is the start of all design. And it's such a true thought, right? It's unless you're frustrated with something, there's no need to change it. So, you know, why would you do anything unless it caused some level of frustration in the first place? And that's, I think, why, you know, I particularly love some of the stories Lebang has been uncovering on Thursdays, because These are people who have met frustrating situations, like all of us do every single day. And rather than choosing the easy way out, which is to complain and whine and do what often gets done, they've chosen to solve for it in their own little way.
Yeah.
And, you know, we often think, you know, what good does just talking about it do? You know, we also have to face the question around this is us as a movement to say, you know, is it enough to just talk about these inspiring actions? And what we've certainly discovered as we've gone around sort of talking to individuals, trying to put this coalition of the willing together, is there is no lack of motivation in South Africa to do what needs to be done.
Right.
We have met so many people. What's potentially the gap is to collect those things so we can inspire everybody else to go, like, look at what is being done. And all is not lost, and you can certainly do something small, because that's, you know, climate change is a similar thing, right? It feels so big, you kind of go, shit, like, I hope Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos solves it, you know, but they're too busy trying to get to space. But, you know, it's so big, you feel like, what is my little piece of recycling going to do? What's my little thing going to do? And I think the more of these stories we see, the more we realize, actually, it is the little things. It's the little things everyone's doing that adds up to who we are.
Yeah, but don't you think, Yatish, also people have got this unrealistic expectation that they're going to change the world, especially millennials and Gen Z. You know, like, I'm going to be the one that saves the earth, because you hear about the big problems and you think, well, if I don't have a hand in solving the big problems, then I'm not important. But that's nonsense. I mean, this woman that Lebang interviewed, who's, you know, she's doing this job of feeding people who are desperate and people who are much, much poorer than, you know, than you when you feel a little bit hungry because you haven't eaten breakfast that morning. She's doing an incredible job. Now, she's not going to get the attention that Greta Thunberg gets, but she's probably doing more on a daily basis than Greta Thunberg is, because she's not talking to a bunch of people and, you know, sailing on a ship across the Atlantic, which I don't know how much that helps, but I think it probably helps more to be feeding people in South Africa than it does to be doing those things. And we're trying to find a way to balance the attention that some causes get, which they just do because they're sexy causes, and the actual practical difference that some people are making. And sometimes those people get no credit at all. And that's okay, because you don't need the credit. Frankly, all that credit doesn't help at all.
Yeah, if anything, like, doing the actual groundwork and being there in the moment is all that matters. Whether there's a camera on you, mm-hmm. whether you're getting credit for it, none of that matters. I promise you, these women that I speak to and these people that I'm chatting to, they don't really care much about it. Like, while we're sitting there doing the interview, she kept looking at her watch, like, you know, like, looking at the time, and I'm like, is everything okay? She's like, I need to get back to the kitchen to feed my kids. I'm grateful to be here. This interview is lovely, and thanks. But the kids are hungry, and that's where my heart is. And that's when it hit me. I was like, damn, okay, this is actually very real. And her daughter did most of the talking, and her daughter was like, look, the one good thing that social media has done for us is that, you know, people who want to help are able to help. Mm-hmm. You found us on social media, so here we are. Hopefully the right people will hear this interview, and they will help us if they can. But it's not what drives them. The credits and the attention and all of the smoke and mirrors, the fluff, doesn't matter. It's the actual work that's getting done. And also a big important part of this is redefining the saving of the world. It's not a big cape that you put on flying in the sky. It's not everything that you know, we've believed it to be growing up. It is really those small things. It is really, and I'm glad you mentioned the Gen Zs, because I spent quite a bit of time with Gen Zs, I think, in the most part of last year. They're a different bunch, guys. Those kids are a different bunch, and they really want to do a lot, but they want to do a bigger lot, and they want to do a big show in saving. And I'm interested to see how in This Is Us and redefining what that saving is. I have no doubt that they'll also just come to the party and be like, look, we don't have to, you know, do a whole TikTok trend or big thread on Twitter, but let's just do us. Do you in the little that you can, and watch.
You're right, Lebang. We measure this stuff wrong. Like, that's the problem, is we actually measure it wrong. Mm. Because you cannot help everybody else if you yourself are a disaster. And by that, I mean, like, you've got to start off in your own neighborhood. You've got to start off in your own family. You've got to start off with your own kids or your own friends or your own community. And if you can't do that, then forget about trying to save the world. Like, little steps. Little steps. You eat an elephant one bite at a time. You don't swallow the whole thing. And there's no one. There is no one on earth, not the most powerful person in the universe and not the most inconsequential new young soul that exists. There isn't one of those people who's suddenly going to click their fingers and stumble upon some great truth that will save the planet or save, you know, sort out inequality or any of these big issues that politicians throw at us, because frankly, we can never really measure to see whether they've achieved them or not. What we need to do is sort out things in our own community. It means picking up litter. It means making sure that somebody has a meal that day. It's smiling at somebody instead of scowling at them and complaining. You know, I saw a guy yesterday. I went to do some shopping, and he was so furious about the parking ticket that was unreadable that it just completely blinded him to everything else. And he was in a temper. Like, this guy was in a temper. What he ended up doing is wasting me and about three or four other people in the queue behind him's time by arguing with the woman in the parking office. Now, did he really think that that woman in the parking office was going to be, you know, upset by him all day? That it was going to change her life for the worse for that morning? And all because, instead of being calm and understanding that sometimes things don't work out exactly right and sometimes a ticket just gets damaged and sometimes it can't be read, he decided that this was his moment to, like, put on a show and to get cross. I look at things like that. I'm like, what? Why would you, dude, to start tidying up your own life, and then we'll figure out the other steps.
That's coming from somewhere, Gareth. For him to get that voice and that angry, that ticket situation was just an outlet. He needed that to happen so whatever's really hurting him inside could come out. Isn't it funny how, like, really there's nothing new under the sun? There's, like, that age-old saying that charity begins at home. It's not a lie. Mm-hmm. Everything literally begins at home. Fix at home. Fix yourself. And by fix, I mean just try to give a little bit more attention to the small details. Do you know what I mean? So that who you are outside of the home and who you are everywhere else can also just start to, you know, get into other areas of your life. And as Yatish was saying earlier, you know, the gap is we can talk, but are we actually implementing these things, you know?
Well, I mean, go
ahead. Yeah, and, you know, we've...
Go ahead.
Sorry,
go ahead. No, go ahead. No.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've sort of had to resist for a long time in setting up This Is Us, in, particularly in the ad industry. You know, it's what's the big idea? How are you going to measure it? What's going to get all the likes? How big is the campaign? And we've had to fight our own instincts so hard to go, you know, this is not what we're trying to do. It's not, you know, when eventually this hopefully becomes something worth talking about. The case study here is not, here's an amazing film that gets entered into Cannes about how our idea did a bunch of things. No. What we're simply doing is creating the space for people who are doing amazing things to be able to tell their stories. This, for once, this is not our grand idea that, to your point, right, is the Cape moment that saves the country. No. It's, we've got to build the infrastructure for the right stories in South Africa to surface and for everyone to realize that it's the little things they do every day that will slowly turn the tide of where we're headed. That's the goal, you know. It's not going to be one big campaign that wins at Cannes but actually doesn't move the needle. It's a really, really slow burn that needs to build collectively over time.
All right, so that brings me to our second point of discussion for this morning, and something which I think people are now starting to become interested in, is that how do you take this talk and lead it into action?
Cool. So, I mean, you know, what we've done, and I think I've, you know, said this a few times in sort of various ways, but I think, you know, to your point, to be super, super pointed about that, what we're looking for is what we're looking for is two things, I think. The first thing is to say either you are doing something along the ethos and the lines that we're talking about here, which is looking for a little way that you can make a difference every day. And if you do that, share it with the hashtag This Is Us so we can collect it. That's the one thing. The second thing is either you, if you're not doing it yourself, you've identified or seen or heard or experienced someone else doing the same. And if you have, share what they're doing, talk about what they're doing, and include the hashtag This Is Us so, again, we can collect it. You know, our role is to inspire these positive actions. And so the role of everybody else in South Africa is to help us see it, help us find it, help us do it and post it so that we can collect it and build something strong enough that shows, yeah, you know, there are a lot of people doing the right thing.
Tell us.
And here's how you can get involved.
So tell us if there's someone in your community that does amazing work. Tell us if there's something that you've been involved in for a while, because even if you're not the kind of person who likes attention, you know, there are lots of people like that. We spoke to our first lady the other day who has been involved with something called the Early Care Foundation for the longest time. And they do amazing work by helping very, very young kids who are in disadvantaged communities, in townships and so on, who don't have anyone to look after them for starters. They don't necessarily attend any kind of creche or preschool. And they've set up across the country, the Early Care Foundation, a number of these places where kids can go, and we're also women in the community who are unemployed and can be the caregivers, can do the training that's required to help these kids along. If we can help children to become capable and to get the right software uploaded into their brains at a very young age, they will be better adults. And if we don't do that stuff, those kids are going to be at a disadvantage for their entire lives. So that's the kind of thing. And of course, the First Lady doesn't like attention. We had to force her to talk to us about this stuff. And eventually when she did, she was very, very proud of the work that other people are doing in that respect. And she continues to be a patron of that organization. And it's a really great example of what goes on. So even if you don't like the attention, tell us about it. We want to make a fuss of you, and we want to make a fuss of your cause so you can help more people.
Absolutely. And isn't that like always the case, or most times anyway? People that are that selfless and people that are actually doing good, they're not sitting there wanting, you know, the placards. They're not sitting there wanting gold status. They just want to spread more. I mean, meeting the First Lady for me was insane. Number one, I'm nervous as hell. But the way she spoke about you, even Gareth, she was like, Gareth, you know, you've been helping us for this and that many years. And I found myself in a conversation like a few weeks ago where somebody was like, oh, how could you work for Gareth Cliff? All the bad that he's done. I was like, do you know the good that he's done? Dude, I was actually defending, like, do you know the good that he's done? And the truth is, they don't, because nobody wants to talk about that. But we do, we want to shed light on that good, you know?
Well, I mean, the point that Yatish brought up now about how we've got to lead this to action takes us to another thing, which is, how do you measure this? Because people do want to know eventually whether they are making a difference or not. And the only people who can really tell whether you're making a difference or not are you and the people that you're supposedly helping. And that's hard to measure. That's not about likes or about retweets or about how much you punch in the media space. But we certainly want to give you an opportunity to do it. So if you can help, we would love to know what your take on all of this is. There's the hashtag hashtag #trashtag Fridays, which I think is interesting, which I want you to tell us about a little bit, Lebang. What's that all about?
So basically, hashtag #trashtag, which is basically like Fridays for Future. We're seeing more and more people coming together in their little communities and doing things. Mm-hmm. So I think that the link between this is us and what we're realizing on the streets and the stuff that's happening in the ground is that all it really is going to take is a simple hashtag. It doesn't need to be this massive thing. It doesn't need to be you putting on a show. It's just as simple as, yo, bro, this is my neighbor. She wakes up every morning at 5 a.m. and she freaking bakes cookies for everybody in the community, the people that are on their way to work or whatever. That's the emphasis that we're trying to put. And I guess in us doing this, we're also trying to find, you know, the one thing that we're all ultimately fighting for. We'll never fight for it in the same way. For one person, it's I need to feed my community. For another person, it's I need to plant trees in my neighborhood. For another person, it's I need to put together scholarships for underprivileged kids. We all kind of want the same goal, but getting there, you know, it's the thing that kind of, there's that one thing that we all have in common. It's that we ultimately want South Africa to be a better place. So hashtag this is us is our answer. We're saying, look, You guys are doing great things. Help us to collect these stories. Help us to put it in one place that everybody can see that this is what's happening. We're just shedding light on that. And we're no longer waiting for the media to decide what's a worthy story and what isn't a worthy story.
Correct.
That's not what we're doing here.
Like
Do you know
that.
What I mean? We've given them way too much power. Like, you guys decide what we listen to. That propaganda stuff is tired. We're here to push positivity. Whether you want to hear it or not, amen.
Well,
we're doing our part.
Marco says this is an awesome conversation. I agree it is. It's something we can now get involved in. And let's just remember who we're doing this for. We're doing it for ourselves, for this country, and for everything that we stand for. And it's important for us to have some kind of objective view of ourselves, because I think that this is a way to make things better. And also to remind yourself of what's possible. We tend to look at the news every day and get persuaded that things are horrible and things are bad and things are terrible and there's nothing we can do. And that's just not true. Michael says, and I think this is a great point, if your bedroom cupboard is untidy, the world is sure to piss you off. So start off by sorting that out, and then you can take little steps towards saving the rest of the planet. But you can't start off with the rest of the planet and expect that everything's just going to work out for you. So I love it. I think we lost your Tish somewhere in there. His internet must have gone down. But we will catch up with him again next week, Tuesday, same time, same place. We're out of time for this morning. Lebang Hosana and me thanking you for joining us this morning, and we will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. Cheers, everybody. Have a lovely Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye. CliffCentral.com.